to the NCAA edition of the D3 podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kaplan. With me, as always, is Caleb Abney. Caleb, say hello.
Hello. Great to be on, Dan.
All right. And we have a loaded episode. We have plenty of bracket content here towards the end of the episode. Before we dive into all that, we're going to talk about, conference championship weekend. Caleb, I know, has plenty of thoughts on how all those games played out. I, as always, have plenty of thoughts on how all those games played out. And I don't really know what else to say at this point other than I am fired up to talk to you guys here for a little while and fired up to see how the rest of the season plays out.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, before we get into that, what's going on with your sweatshirt there? Looks pretty sweet.
You like this?
Yeah, Morgan State.
That's what it is. Brand spanking new.
Ooh, looks nice.
Lacrosse. I was scrolling Twitter the other day, as I am known to do, and saw that Kobe Johnson, their club manager there, club president and organizer there for their team, had posted something that they were selling sweatshirts, and I was like, oh boy, like jumped right on it right away. And then, boom, 2 days later, here it is in the mail. And came just in time for me to watch these games tonight while we were watching the draft. So,
That's awesome.
Right up about this. The orange is nice and bright on that blue background. So it is a solid, solid hoodie champion. You see that?
Yeah. That's hot. That's hot.
Highly recommend. So what do you say? Should we get on into it and dive in, get to the nitty gritty here on D3 Lax Pod?
Let's do it. I can't wait.
All right, let's get to some scores. All right, so like we said, super happy to be here. Pumped up to be talking with you guys. And let's go ahead. We'll get into some games here, get into some scores. And before we get into anything specific, Caleb, why don't you talk to the people. What was your favorite game of the weekend? It was an awesome slate. Let's just start there. What was the number one big dog game of the weekend?
Oh, yeah, Dan. This weekend was so much fun. I had a blast watching it. First and foremost, got to shout out one of my favorite games was being up in Siena and watching my sister play. She had her MAC conference championship. She played for Monmouth, as you guys listeners know. They ended up losing in the conference championship, but they played hard. It was awesome to see them play. So good to see her go out there senior year. Talking D3 Lax now here, focusing in. There were some amazing games. I mean, first that comes to mind was York and Stevenson, how Stevenson battled back, really made that a great game. So that was definitely one of my favorites. Salisbury taking it to CNU, getting the victory win, which we talked about earlier in the year. Maybe that was a fault of CNU to win big early. We don't know. We'll get into it. So those are two big ones for me. But I think ultimately my favorite was probably the Dickinson over Gettysburg. That 10-9 OT win for Dickinson, and to see Gettysburg battle back and really make it a game there at the end was quite a show. So I think that takes the cake for me, but all three of those could really be a great choice.
Yeah, and that kind of sets the table for where we're headed. We're going to preview all those games. The Liberty League game between RIT and St. Lawrence was an awesome first quarter. Not so great a game after that. But I think if I had to pick my game of the weekend, it would be that semifinal Amherst-Bowdoin game that was just electric. I mean, like, as close as it gets, could not come any closer for Amherst hitting that.
All right, so time out. If we're allowing semis, then I gotta throw in the Amherst Bowdoin game as well. Then,
on the weekend.
Fine. You're right. Electric. But yes, go on.
No, that was it. Why don't we just dive right in on that one? Set the table a little bit. Semi-final action here. Amherst and Bowdoin, they battle down. It is, as tight as it gets. ultimately you end up having Amherst, who has a lead, has the ball late in the game. I'll say it's around like the minute 30 mark. The Polar Bears are out and doubling. Amherst takes a shot, which had to happen because they were at the end of the shot clock, right? So lots of people, my brother, the first thing he said was, why are you even shooting? Evolution here a little bit. There was a shot clock, so had to take something. Or were going to have to take something. Empty netter. You think that's probably the one. If it's a little bit farther, you know, in the right direction, you're looking at game over. Unfortunately, it hits the pipe, picks up and goes the other way. Bowden scores. And so now they have a little bit of life, you know. They get another one with like 30 seconds left and then ultimately end up winning it in regulation off of a forward fast break that I think hits the back of the net with around 8 seconds left. And not only does he like win it forward, pick it up clean and score, he's like, he's hounded the whole time. And, you know, props to him. That's Ethan Barnard that comes up big for them and pushes them into the NESCAC championship in dramatic fashion.
Oh, absolutely electric game. So Brock was just going off. Props to him and Clemente. They were both kind of getting their own out there. But yeah, going back to those plays that you just discussed. So first off, need to give a shout out to Hobbs there. Absolutely great play by him to hustle back. I don't know if you saw it there, but he actually sprinted back a good bit and made a diving play. You know, he didn't actually touch the ball, but as the shooter, you see the goalie diving back into the cage. You're naturally going to lean that to the far side, to the left a little bit in this case, which he did, and it ended up hitting the pipe. So did he actually touch the shot? No, but did he affect the shot? 100%. So props to him for that play there. That was huge. But yeah, going to the faceoff, that was just a huge win. Thought there might have been a little bit of a trip there, but I'm glad the refs let the boys play. Always love to see them play. So thought it was a greatly officiated game, and no complaints there or anything. But it was a great comeback win by Bowden there and the Polar Bears to come back and get that. So great job by them, and just an absolute awesome game. If anybody is interested in watching some great D3 lacrosse and has some time on their hands, feel free to go back and try to find that, because it was an awesome game to watch.
Yep, and that offense for Amherst was great. You know, like, they end up with 14 goals through the first three quarters and like 5 minutes or so of the game. And then just, you know, completely go cold. They don't score again for the last 9 minutes of the game. And so that, you know, kind of leaves the door open for Bowden to come in and score. And just to correct myself on those times, so that was a goal with a minute 34 left after the empty netter situation. Then you had another one with 15 seconds left that tied it, followed by another one with 8 seconds left in the game that then put Bowden up by one. So just, I mean, like, this is like a lifetime, like maybe a couple times we'll see this type of a comeback, maybe. Like, I mean, it was just absolutely insane. You know, it's one of the reasons that like being a D3 lacrosse fan is so fun.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more.
And so this one set the table for another one that was, I mean, quite frankly, it was pretty disappointing in the NESCAC championship with Tufts and Bowden. And so Tufts takes that one 20-11, and it ends up serving as their 11th title in the past 12 NESCAC seasons. So really just a string of dominance up there for them right now. You know, and it's kind of crazy to think that. And I certainly would not have, if you had told me that, I would have said, like, are you sure? Like, let's double check that. You know, I it's just such a deep league up there. And we said the same thing with, or we will say the same thing in a few minutes with RIT winning 10 straight in the Liberty. But that string of dominance, you like, that's crazy considering that, you know, the teams in the NESCAC and the teams in the Liberty like that, they're no slouches, you know, there's no easy games in there. So that's quite impressive to have that type of run. And, you know, that's really, you know, impressive.
Hey. Extremely impressive. Yeah, and just want to kind of call out how Tufts is kind of getting back into their game. Looking through the stats here, I mean, they're pretty even on faceoffs. Well, Bowdoin did really struggle in the clear. It looks like they went 12 for 23 there, so pretty tough day for them on that. But what really stands out to me is
– right there. We have to talk about it.
Let's go for it. You know me and clears.
It is painful. Oh, it is painful. It really, like, in the first quarter, you see it right away. You got guys running into the same spot, like, occupying the same space. And here's my big thing with it. I really feel that they were super committed to clearing the ball by throwing the ball over midline rather than having midfielders checking back and starting to leg it out. And I don't know if they just didn't trust those guys to be able to beat out the Tufts attack, or if they just were too worried about those guys legging it out and now they're running into double teams. But man, like, the throwing it over midline being the only way we're going to clear in this game was brutal.
Very, very harsh. And I mean, it showed 3 for 8 in that first quarter there, giving Tufts so many second opportunities, which they capitalized on early. So that is tough to see there. No pun intended.
Shocking, actually, that the first quarter wasn't a bigger margin.
It really should have been. I mean, with all the turnovers that we saw, it really should have been, you know, 5-6 to 1 there.
And if it wasn't for your boy Hobbs, I don't know how many first quarter saves he made. If you're looking at the stats, you can find it. But I don't know how many first quarter saves he made, but he made some good ones that were at least, you know, like in transition and tight. And so probably had a lot to do with him.
So look, 6 saves in the first quarter and 9 saves in the second quarter. So quick math there, 15. Don't call me a genius. But 15 saves on 9 goals allowed in the first half. That's an insane game you got going on against Tufts. That it's hard to keep going for 4 quarters there. So props to him for keeping it going. And hopefully, you know, they can kind of figure out the defensive situation in front of Hobbs moving forward in the tournament here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's definitely something that they're going to have to address. And, you know, we have referred to these metrics a good amount this year. You know, their offense is quite high, like in the top 5, and their defense is quite low. You know, like, I'm not even going to say the number because it's so low.
Very nice of you.
Well, after the clearing, because I like their coach. I don't want him to be mad at me. But after the clearing, my clearing ran a little bit earlier. I don't know that we need to pack it on too much. And to be quite honest, like, that's a huge part of the defensive number, is that you're asking them to just play too much defense and you're asking them to defend in transition, which both of those things against a tough team that is as slick as they are doesn't sound like a good recipe. And
yep.
To kind of piggyback off of that, the explosion they have on offense when it does kind of finally start to hit the fan and, you know, they start to roll a little bit, it's really impressive. And the way that they score, like, as an offensive guy, like, it's good stuff. You know, you get lots
it's
of
fun to watch.
Passes, you get people, like, split one way, quick throwback to, like, one touch, no look, pass inside to somebody who's covered but catches it anyways. And then as they're falling to the ground, they shoot it behind the back and it's nowhere close to the goal, but they back it up anyways. And you're just like, whoa, like, that was insane.
Yep. couldn't agree more. Yeah, last stat on this before we move on here. Shots, total shots here at the end of the day, Tufts got to their 80. So, I mean, 80 shots is you know, insane. So props to them. They're rolling. Definitely not a team I want to be playing.
It felt like Radal took a million.
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see here. Boom. Oh, 20. You're close with a million.
What'd you say?
20 of the 80 were from Bradal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Hmm. I mean, I know he had 8 points. I think it was 6-2, right? So
yep, 6-2. 12 of those 20 were on goal. So
yeah.
Not bad in the grand scheme of things.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So moving forward from that one, Tufts and Bowdoin, both obviously tournament teams. And so I don't want to get too much into it because we're going to go down. We're going to talk about the bracket in a little bit here after we review some of these games. But two teams that we're definitely going to hit on in a little bit here, again, when it gets down into bracket talk. But until then, let's keep going with some games here. Should we head to your overtime favorite?
Let's do it.
All right, let's head over to the Centennial. And man, what a game. Dickinson heads into the halftime up 7-0. And I'm thinking that's pretty much it. You know, like maybe Gettysburg comes out, gives it a run, but ultimately 7 goals is probably pretty much, you know, too big of a margin that they're not going to shut them out. And they're not going to hold them to 2 goals in the second half. You know, like that's not what's going to happen. So, you know, this one's probably over. Boy, was I wrong. Gettysburg comes out. They just slowly chip away. You know, they one at a time. There's no two-pointers in this game. And then next thing you know, it's 9-9, and you're heading into overtime, and you're like, oh, my gosh, is Dickinson going to take their first loss of the season? You know, imagine this. They go – they win 17 straight. They go undefeated in the conference, and then they drop one in the conference title game after going up 7-0. Could you imagine that?
Oh, my gosh, I would be devastated.
It'd be insane. It'd be just – I mean, it would be the most Division III lacrosse thing of all time, but, like, it would have just been incredible. It was a crazy narrative. But fortunately for them, they hold on. And then did you see how it played out at the end of the game?
There was that penalty there that kind of led to the man-up situation for Dickinson at the end.
Yeah, Dickinson kind of ends up on the right side of two calls here towards the end of the season that really helped them. The Your Sinus game, they end up in the locked-in penalty. They score man up, go up, and then Your Sinus can't come out and double because they're locked in. And then here they get the extra man one. So it kind of seems like we might have to say it. They're undefeated. They have all these breaks. Are they a team of destiny?
I think they might be. I mean, this is definitely the year to be a team like this. Maryland
/ Georgetown goalie just transfer in. Like, you know, that doesn't happen in Division III.
Not every day. Yeah, and I was a little concerned with you, Brando, there, you know, towards the end with that streak of you know, 7 in the fourth quarter there. Thought there might have been one or two he maybe could have stopped the bleeding with, but it was tough. You know, there was kind of that onslaught there with Gettysburg kind of chipping away. But all at the end of the day,
all those nerves, you know, like
it's trust me, it's tough. I've been there, and I've been the one to let the goals in. So I can tell you firsthand, it's not easy what I'm saying, but it's definitely what is needed of the leader of a team like that. And to be, you know, and kind of in the position that he is in a top team. So would have liked to see that, but, you know, they still pull it out and they still find a way, and good teams find a way to win in May. So definitely would consider them one of the top teams here.
Yeah, definitely. And that was a really good one. And just to recap some of the scoring there, you had Matt Thurston leading the way with 5 points on 3 goals and 2 assists, freshman attackman. And then you had Tucker Booth, who we've talked about a couple times on here. And I'll Venmo you right now. I'll pull my phone out. I'll get it set. I'll Venmo you right now if you tell me if you remember the specific thing that I like about Tucker Booth's game.
Oh. I'm gonna have to say his change of direction.
Nope. Incorrect. Ah. Feed first midfielder are dangerous because they said everybody in Division III sets their attack as like off-ball finishers and slick guys and less initiators. So then when you have a good initiator paired with a good midfield feeder, that then you start to get people sliding to the midfielder initiator, then the ball goes to the midfield feeder. And now you're finding all those attackmen off of it. It can be very, 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 very nice. And that's kind of the Dickinson identity right now, is that they get those midfielders dodging downhill and those attackmen take care of you behind it. And Booth ends up with 0 goals but 4 assists on the day, headlining that midfield first feeding in them.
I should have known with the stats. You're always a shark at that.
You know it. You know it. And so it kind of reared its head in this game. And then both goalies, like you said, were good. McMillan registered 8 saves on the day and Brandao with 14. And then again, we're in a situation where both of these teams end up with pool C's. And I think we probably knew that. If you read the Inside Lacrosse D3 bracketology, you would have seen that they were both losers of the NESCAC championship, obviously, and the Centennial championship, obviously, were set to be pool C's. So shouldn't surprise you too much going into it, knowing that both teams were probably going to end up making it to the NCAA tournament.
Definitely.
So let's go ahead and we'll save Salisbury CNU, another situation where we knew both teams were going to head to the tournament. And let's go to one where we didn't. And we'll go to the MAC with York and Stevenson. I got a picture of you and your computer in the live stream, so I knew you were all on it. Why don't you start us off with this one and give us some of the big dog thoughts?
This was a fun one, man. Oh. It's always fun watching your boys play in a championship there. So props to them for getting there, and props for them to putting on a great show. And it looked like a electric atmosphere out there. So good job to everybody involved with that. But to the game, I thought York came out with a strong game plan. They've played Stevenson and watched Stevenson a lot now, so they kind of know what they're about, and came out with a game plan that they executed quite well. And I thought at the end of the first half that this is going to be a game that, we kind of had handedly. I think I even texted a buddy and said, like, yeah, like we were mad about the first one being so close. Like this is revenge for that. So maybe I'll put a little bit of the jinx on myself there for that. But Stevenson comes out in the third quarter ready to play. They had no quit in them. So props to them for coming out and fighting hard and making it a tough game, and it gets York some really great looks. I'm excited that this game was as close as it was, because you really don't want a cupcake schedule going into the tournament and then playing these great teams. So you want to be battle tested, you want to be ready, and that's exactly what the Mustangs gave to York there. So great game, and props to everybody involved, and looking forward to seeing what York has going into the tournament.
Yeah, that was really well said. And I have a couple things to add. Obviously was able to dive into this one pretty well. And so from our perspective, like the York fan perspective, I think most of the year we were kind of worried about a situation where when a team finds a way to get to 12, 13, like are scorers going to be able to find a way to get those answers and, you know, have a game where if it's needed, get to 15. And we saw in that moment, like that was, it happened, you know,
against a good goalie too. I mean, Paust is one of the best out there. So props to that. And a lot of it came through transition, through guys we haven't seen too much of being goal scorers this year.
Yeah. So let's keep heading that direction on Stevenson. We'll go back, we'll backtrack back to saying nice things about York, but I want to piggyback off of your compliment to Paust in that defense. The defense is, we've said it a few times this year, like that defense is much farther along. And at this point, you can't say farther along, but like they came together much quicker and thus got better, like significantly better compared to some previous defenses that Stevenson has rolled out. And so part of it is they had a Muhlenberg transfer come in, Ryan Quinn, who comes in and guards other teams' number ones, which previously that's been Nicholas Mulvey, who's out of Dematha and went to Stevenson right away and got lots of time as a freshman. And both of those guys are really strong covers. So not only is your one going to, you know, struggle to win his matchup, but your two almost isn't basically guaranteed not to, because Mulvey's been a one. And so those two guys hold it down. And then Paust is just polished, man. Like he is very, very good between the pipes. If you're going to score on him, it's off of good movement. It's off of good offense where now he's having to step and find the ball. It's off of feeds inside. Like you're not scoring off junk, like contested shots where you're trying to score unassisted goals and he can stare you down as a Dodger. Like that ain't happening. And so that defense, you know, was what is really impressive. So could, more to the point of, you know, when York needed it, were they able to get the goals? And, you know, in this moment they were. And then, and you know, that's just, you know, got to be kind of from a York perspective, you know, something that's, you know, a really good sign.
Definitely. Yep. And if I have to, if we want to jump back here and do some nitpicking, because we've said a lot of nice things about York so far, and we probably will.
Again, gotta do some nitpicking.
Yeah, we have to, you know, it's only fair. I mean, just looking through everything here, I guess I really didn't dive into the stats too much, but only 3 saves from Michael. That you know, is maybe a little bit concerning. I know he's one of the best, so he's definitely going to turn it on when needed. But you know, I was watching it, and you know, honestly, there might have been a couple there where I would have liked to seen a save, but you know, they still find a way to win. And like we just talked about in Dickinson, you know, good teams find a way to win in May, and it might not be the way you've been winning or historically have won, but you know, they, like we said, you know, they pull out 15 goals and are able to pull out a win against a good team. So props, my criticism there just quickly turned into props to them, but you know, the props to them for being able to change and adapt.
Well, I'll keep nitpicking, and I'm not just going to nitpick York, but I'll nitpick your point about Jack, which is definitely true. You want to see higher save numbers than 3, you know? And maybe there were 1 or 2 in there that he could have snagged, but I more so feel like the York defense, who we've given a lot of praise to all year, you know, they do a lot of showing and sliding and supporting, and to Stevenson's credit, they were able to take advantage of that at times, and not necessarily, you know, a whole ton of times. Like, it's not like, you know, 13 is in a shot clock era a number that's just like totally insurmountable or eye opening. There was definitely an element of Jack probably wasn't seeing the ball to the best of his ability, but also that when the York defense did get beat or have to, or did give up a shot, it was something that was a high percentage opportunity.
Definitely. Yep. And there was a lot of transition going on in that game. It was an ugly one with the weather and everything. Both teams had to play in it, but you know, it wasn't a, you know, a standard game by any means like that.
All right. So like we said, that one had just about everything you could want. Lots of different runs, tons of momentum swings, some awesome goals, some great defense. Was a, you know, just one of those games that it just had May written all over it. Like you could have been placed anywhere and anytime, just like randomly placed there in that moment, and you would have been like, this is some May lacrosse.
Yep. 100%. It was so much fun. It was another one of those electric showings, and I'm happy. Like I said, they got a game like this, and they're kind of going into the tournament battle tested and ready to go.
Definitely. All right, so let's go ahead. We'll move on from the Spartans and the Mustangs. Well, actually, we're only going to partially move on from them, because we do need to hit Stevenson again when we get down into our bracket discussion, when we're talking about team selection. So we'll get back to Stevenson again. York, we probably won't talk about again until the next podcast. So hoping, you know, obviously as 2 former alums, that they make as big of a run and that they're still alive for us to be able to be talking about them in a week from now.
Yes, please.
All right. And so after that, we'll go, I guess we got to go north here again. And let's go to the Empire 8, St. John Fisher 30, Nazareth 11. Don't know how much I have to say about this one, other than that St. John Fisher has to be going in feeling themselves, you know. A lot of momentum, a lot of just positive energy heading into the tournament, but kind of in that similar boat where we're talking about, like, not sure how recently they've been tested to be able to have a ton of confidence here in a tight game in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I do worry about maybe a tight game situation, but honestly, with the way they've been showing, they might not be in that situation for a little bit of time here. They've really been steamrolling teams, and they look like they're firing on all cylinders from what I've seen. So not too many notes on this game, other than this is one of the teams that I don't want to play in May.
All right, yeah. So let's go ahead and we'll hit on their opponent for the NCAA tournament, and that is Catholic, who is our landmark winner. And this game was tied at halftime. So, you know, it had a little bit of a game to it, and then Catholic comes out and kind of separates the edge, and now we're set up for a St. John Fisher, actually Catholic game. So we'll kind of dive into some of the matchups and that, like we said, in a bit. But Catholic E-Town was a really good one, citing, and, you know, Catholic now takes two straight in the landmark after E-Town took three straight. And so it's kind of a shift here happening in the landmark that I'm sure the Blue Jays feel that they want to right the ship on next year.
Definitely something they're going to look to improve and try to get those recruits coming in to try to combat what Catholic's been throwing at them. So props to them for winning it for the past 2 years and taking it to them in with a big second half. And you, looking forward to seeing – oh, go ahead.
Did you work in an E-Town recruits pitch on purpose?
Oh, no, never. No, oh. But if they want to shoot me a little bit of a kickback, my Venmo is always open.
I have two of my guys are heading there next year. Two current Lions on my Howard team are going to be headed to go play for Coach McGuire next year. So
there we go. Congrats to them. Sounds like Coach is getting some good players there.
Darn right. He's going to get some seasoned IQs. He's going to get some guys that come in and, you know, if they're hanging around me, they're getting some good lax IQ in them.
The best in the biz. That's why I always had you around to warm me up and do everything. Yeah, right. Always the best.
I actually introduced one of them to my drop kick today, which was, if you're not paying attention, I come up and drop kick you in the back of the head. And so because he is actually out for the season with a torn ACL and he was distracting people, I had to run up behind him and drop kick him in the back of the head.
Good, good. Yep, so give him a head and a leg injury. Perfect.
Bingo. Now he's torn ACL.
ACL's not so bad now, huh?
All right, let's keep it moving. I know you caught this one, too. We were texting back and forth about it a little bit here. A big one. Salisbury, 15. CNU, 10. And they right the wrong. And so we've talked about this one a bunch. You warned CNU.
I told them. I waved the flag.
I'm not sure you were the only one to warn them, but CNU ends up falling victim to the beat Salisbury in the regular season and then end up losing in the tournament, which is, as we know, a tough feat.
Yep. Definitely tough to see. This was a tough one. It played out a little bit differently than the first game. For CNU there, which was tough for them. You know, they wanted to try to get into their game plan, which was kind of similar to the last time. And Salisbury, to their credit, didn't let them. They kind of were playing a lot more stout on defense, a little bit better goalie play, and they kind of played their game, and they got to the Salisbury game. And like we've seen year after year after year, if you let Salisbury play their game, they're going to beat you. But if you get them off their game and try to make them play with you a little bit more, that's when you can get them on their heels. But when they're comfortable and firing like they were, there's no stopping them, and they were on a roll this past weekend.
Yeah, so this was a really weird game. It's the highest scoring Salisbury first quarter that I can recall, like ever, both teams on both sides.
I think so.
Not only is it like they come out and they're just scoring like crazy, which like Salisbury is usually the death by many cuts, I would say. They don't usually come out and just like land left hook, right hook, left hook, right hook. It's more just like body shot, body shot, body shot until you are just absolutely like in the corner, and then they just kind of push you over, you know. And so they come out throwing some haymakers though, and then CNU also throwing haymakers, and it ends up 6-6 at the end of the first, which was just odd to me. And then from there on out, the defense kind of settles in, and then in the second half, they allow just one goal. So really own the second half, own matchups. And like, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I didn't see anything super different from A, the first time they played, or B, between halves, for them to go from giving up 6 in the first quarter to 1 in the entire second half. Like, I honestly just felt like it was more of like a, they buckled in, hunkered down, and then CNU kind of didn't put their best foot forward for the first time all season.
That's kind of what I think it was too. I think it was a little bit more of CNU. I don't know why they were playing this way, but they may have been like a little bit hesitant with the ball, and with their decision making as far as taking shots and trying to push it a little bit there. So I would have liked to see him be a little bit more confident and kind of be the team that did beat Salisbury and give them their biggest loss in forever. And they just didn't really play like that.
Perhaps we just, you remember the thing in 21 Jump Street, where they say it's whatever theory, which is when you just take the first piece of evidence that you're handed and you like put way too much stock in that. Like maybe we needed to be more concerned about how poorly Salisbury played in that game, which like they have some uncharacteristic just like throwaways. Their defense doesn't seem dialed in. Like they're one of those teams that you can basically count on their pick play and like communication on that stuff to be like just dialed in. And I don't know how great that was the first time. And so like, I'm not saying by any means it was a fluke, like CNU earned that win, deserved to win, were the better team. But maybe that they won by 10 was a bit of, you know, a happenstance to also the fact that Salisbury played pretty poorly in that first appearance.
Yeah, and when they're losing like that, it's obvious that they're going to kind of break down and not be the Salisbury that we know. So I can see that happening in the first game like that, and I can see this bounce back happening like this. So, props to Salisbury.
We talked about them. Like I said, they're kind of a body shot team. So when a body shot team gets down, like things start to disintegrate. Whatever the opposite of materializing.
I think disintegrate's great. I'm no thesaurus, but I think that's good.
All right, we'll roll with that. And so that definitely could have been a factor in that moment as well. Only other thing I have on this is just improved goalie play, I felt like, from Salisbury. You mentioned that you thought he played pretty well with Shaheen. Not only do I think he plays pretty well, but he makes a save that could ultimately have changed the game, like a game, like potential goal, like save of the year type play. And so something that, you know, just when you get in a game like that and in a title game and momentum is on the line like that is can be huge.
Giant. That's one of the things that can kind of make or break a whole game like that. So happy he was able to get in there and do that for the team.
Yeah, definitely. All right. And so with Salisbury in the books, let's head to RIT. Who are now the two of them taking the number one and number two in the coaches' polls and the Inside Lacrosse media poll and I believe the U.S. Lacrosse media poll. So basically everybody has RIT in some order of one and two.
And the Big Dog poll.
And the Big Dog poll, perhaps the most official poll.
Some are saying.
So with that said, let's hit the Liberty League final, RIT 13. St. Lawrence 5, and hands up, guys, I jinxed this one. My bad.
Classic Dan.
So I got excited watching this one. First quarter ends, and it's 4-3 or 4-4 or something like that, and I took to the Twitter. I opened up the Bird app. I sent a picture of the score, and I said, here we go, boys. St. Lawrence has drawn the line in the sand, and they're saying, no more. You can win 9 straight. You can win 8 straight, but 10 straight, no double digits, not going to happen. And then after I sent that tweet, St. Lawrence scored 1 goal for the rest of the game. So, my bad.
I'm putting the blame on you for that one. That was
there's no other explanation.
I'm speechless. Speechless. It looked like it was going to be a great game. It was shaping up to be awesome, and then yeah, you tweeted the curse of the Dan Kaplan tweet.
And shout out to the Mr. Maritime on Twitter who was sure to make sure that it came to light that was the case. I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And as much as I want to keep talking about this game, it just was not that great. It was a good first quarter. After that, it's pretty much all RIT. And so rather than continuing to talk about this one, let's just talk Liberty League in general for a second. Four teams in the tournament, which, you know, not something that was on the bingo card preseason. And more specifically, what I want to talk about is conference voting. You and I were texting back and forth about this today. You were quite excited. Would you like to tell the world about the recognition that you were excited about?
All right. Yeah, let's get into that. So my first thought here when I saw this list was I was so pumped to see my man Peter Burns get the offensive player of the year. I thought that was pretty well deserved. I know we went back and forth on that, so we can discuss it here, but I thought that was very well deserved, and that stuck out to me there. Wilhelm, co-defensive player of the year, great honor for him. I thought he was definitely the best goalie in the conference there, so props for him to get in that shout out. And then another big shout out that I have, rookie of the year, Joseph Perry. I mean, we've been talking about this guy all year. He's been absolutely crushing it. Dude, two goalie loves. This is my kind of conference. Call me a Liberty League fan because I'm all in on this. This is great. But yeah, Perry, I mean, we've been talking about him all year. He's been great. So for him to get that honor for the league, that's awesome. So props to all these guys here. What do you think here, Dan? Let's talk about this offensive player of the year.
I just think it's super interesting that each time we've come on here and talked about conference awards, like the number one team in the conference, I feel like is underrepresented. So, I mean, it's really interesting. I guess Gaston gets hurt for a little bit, so he misses some games for RIT, but he probably, like, as a freshman attackman starting for RIT, like, he probably could have given Perry a run for his money. Perry was great. He made a ton of saves all year, so, like, you know, maybe I'm crazy for it. And then, like, offensive player of the year goes to Burns, which he's had a great year. For my money, though, Ryan Barnable is the best midfielder in the country, and probably he's definitely a future pro in the NLL. Future pro potentially in the PLL. I think he's got a shot to get an invite to camp, which we need to work in a segment here at the end of PLL, D3 PLL, so we can give a little shout out to Max Wayne and talk about how Ryan Kennedy's next. And then I think Barnable could find his way to an invite as well. So anyways, I just thought that was interesting, both of those things. But here's the thing. These are voted on by the coaches, so it's pretty tough to argue.
Exactly. And I mean, I know there's the talk of, you know, maybe Burns didn't have the ones on him all year, which is a fair criticism. But I will say, you know, you have the full opportunity to put your one on him. And when he started dicing teams up and torching them, they did put their one on them, and he still continued to do what he does. So the props to him.
He put up a bunch of big numbers in big games. Like, he brought it in games that mattered, you know, like that's
the sign of a good player.
And it's a big deal. I think that makes it for, you know, like, you never want to see somebody getting a whole ton of credit because they're just, you know, putting up numbers on teams that probably aren't nationally competitive.
Exactly. Yep. Big time players make plays in big time games.
Is that the expression?
That I butchered it 100%, but it's something like that.
It takes two to tango or something like that. All right. So I think that'll just about do it for our recap. So are there any other games you think that we've missed here that we should quickly hit? Any other semifinal action that we haven't hit the ODAC. We have to hit the semifinal action is what sparked it for me. Hampton, Sydney, W&L, not heading into ODAC play, the upset that I saw happening. Not sure that I saw any of them happening, but I guess we did say, you know, anything could happen in these. You never really know with the ODAC and with familiar opponents. But ultimately, I thought that both favorites between W&L and Lynchburg were going to advance. Lynchburg took care of business on their side, defeating Roanoke, and then Hampton Sydney upsets W&L and really shakes things up there, which is crazy. And still ends up with an at-large bid, which, you know, is even potentially more, a little bit crazy, but man, just a really interesting turn of events down in the ODAC tournament.
Yeah, very, very shocked to see that that outcome there. But props to Hampden Sydney for going out and playing a great game. And
they are bad, coming, man. They are bad.
Oh yeah,
they really have, like, they're banged up. They have a bunch of guys injured, and even more dudes get injured in that Lynchburg game. And like, at some point, they're man up with three backups. Like, it's they're, you know, really grinding it out, gritting it out. So props to them. Sorry, stole the mic from you, but. Felt that was a
not too much to say here other than that. So good recap there.
All right. Well, I felt that was a good compliment to where you were going. And then did you catch any of the Lynchburg Hampden Sydney actual ODAC final?
Not too much of it. I was keeping tabs on it as much as I could. But what were you seeing there?
Yeah, so that was like in the middle of Mother's Day, like, festivities. So I got to catch a good bit of it on their website. Like, they have the game up, so I was able to go back and watch a good bit of it. Tighter in the first half than maybe you're expecting if you just check out the scores at the end or the stats. But it was a bit tighter in the first half, and then Lynchburg kind of just settles in and ultimately ends up, like, running away with it. They're the more, like, stronger, fitter, more athletic team, so I think that rears its heads, and both just winning matchups and then winning 50-50s and things like that. So over time, that type of stuff, you know, we talked about Salisbury with the body shots. Like, Lynchburg has that same type of thing going for them as well.
Definitely.
All right, and so Lynchburg, WNL, and Roanoke all make the bracket out of the ODAC, which I guess is probably the best transition that we possibly could have. Are you ready to go ahead and talk some brackets?
Let's get into it. I can't wait.
All right. So before we really dive in and we get the big dog thoughts on the bracket, let's kind of set the table here and just lay it out. And so just to clarify, it's 38 teams that are in the tournament. You had 27 pool A's, you had one pool B, and you had 10 pool C's. Pool B's and C's are what's known as the at-large bids. The B's are for teams that win their conference, but their conference doesn't qualify as an automatic qualifying conference. And the pool C's are for your standard at-large teams that are in conferences that would otherwise be pool A, but they don't win their conference. Or they're in a pool B conference, but don't win it, as C and U is that example. And so with that said, those are your types of bids. We have six playing games that'll take place on Wednesday, and then that'll set the round of 32. From there, we'll have Saturday, Sunday games that take you down to the Elite Eight and semifinals on the following weekend, which sets you up for a championship on 5/29, May 29th on Memorial Day weekend in Connecticut. And so with that said, like, let's get into it a little bit. Let me just say, I am ecstatic as a fan of D3 Lax for this one. So Caleb, why don't you take it for a second and give us your first thoughts on the tournament?
Instant thoughts. All right. Well, first off, I want to just say
it's whatever day we're on, Tuesday or Wednesday. Bracket came out Sunday, but you get the point.
Yeah. Live thoughts, instant reaction here. So first off, I want to shout out. I think it's a great selection. I thought they did a good job. They included a lot of the top teams that I thought deserved to be in it. So definitely props to that there. But do have to just say, just looking through it, my first initial reaction was Salisbury, RIT, Tufts, all on the same side of the bracket. So that's pretty crazy to see, and to know that not only is only one of those teams going to be in the championship, but only two of those teams are going to be in the semifinals. So pretty big to see that there. Other than that, though, I think it's a pretty good split up. I mean, the brackets are each division is broken out pretty well, and I think we're getting some really fun matchups that we wouldn't normally see. So that's going to be fun to see. I know Amherst, MIT, that's going to be a fun first round game, and winner of that's going to go and take RIT on. So that's going to be one I'll keep my eyes on for sure. But other than that, we just got some really good matchups, and I'm just really excited for all these games coming up here.
Yeah, that is very well said, Big Dog. I'm right there with you. Super excited about the field. There, you can be critical of the field selection. You can't be critical of the field selection based on the criteria. AKA, you can come and you can say, blank, 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 blank shouldn't be in it. But the only teams that you can basically possibly say besides one, in my opinion, besides one team that didn't win their AQ. So if you don't like the tournament and the reason you don't like the tournament is because the field isn't competitive enough, your problem isn't with the committee. Your problem's with the criteria. Like, the committee did the best job possible selecting the most competitive field according to the criteria that they possibly could have, outside of potentially one team. And even still, based on the criteria, it fits. And so it's tough to argue it. But like I said, if you're one of the people that is not thrilled about the selection, it's not because of the committee. It's not because, they did a poor job. Like, they did a great job. It's because of the criteria.
Yep. So what do you think about the kind of the breakout of it? I know not about maybe necessarily what teams are in, but about how they're kind of broken out here.
Yeah. And so another factor that's important for people to realize is that over 500 miles, you go into flying distance. And so the NCAA has to take all of these teams that enter, including those Midwest teams that have pool A's, and find a way to place everybody accordingly and get them matchups that are fair. So it's basically a completely impossible task. And in the past, we've seen lots of north-south, right? Like, it's been broken into all the northern teams are in the north, all the southern teams are in the south, and then they play it out, right? We've moved from that. And I think that it makes for an awesome tournament, kind of like you were saying, with interesting matchups. Like, now, instead of Wesleyan being up there in the north where they're, going to play another NESCAC team that they've played, I guess it's a bad example because of COVID, but I was going to say that they've played four times in the last 2 years. Like, they're going to go down and have the chance to play CNU, or, if Sewanee or Benedictine somehow was to upset them, those would be two teams that Wesleyan doesn't see. They're going to go down and play RPI, who's a Liberty League team, but they haven't seen them this year either. So, it makes for some really interesting matchups. Some that, as a fan, I'm fired up for this tournament. Like, you have to be super excited for it. And then it's just, I don't even know what your question was, but that's how I feel. I'm just super excited for it that, we get these really interesting, unique matchups. And I think the committee did a good job. All right. So I want to keep rolling with the bracket talk because I think it's the most intriguing content that we're going to ever have. Basically, I love the NCAA tournament. It just fires me up, jacks me up. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the first in and last out. Our first out, we had Stevenson, F&M, Ithaca, and Hope. And if you're wondering why Hope, it was very, very possible and was one of the teams that actually I had in my published preview prediction as in, and I had Roanoke out as that last team. So, really interesting there. And it's cool to see, cool to see from the committee that they made most likely the more interesting pick, or the more competitive pick, I should say. But what did you think of those decisions there and, kind of those bubble teams?
Yeah. I thought, they made some really tough decisions. But, we did have a big field, and I thought they made the right decisions that were probably for the most competitive reasons. So I did like all that. But kind of some last in talk here. I know Amherst kind of barely made it in with four NESCAC teams getting a bid, which, you know, I'm not going to complain about that at all. I'm the biggest Amherst stan out there. But what'd you kind of think about Roanoke getting in? I thought that was kind of an interesting choice there by the committee.
Yeah, so that is the one that I think from like a fan perspective that when you see that, you're like, whoa, like how is that happening? Like there's definitely teams out there that are better or more competitive than Roanoke. I don't know that I would disagree. I think I would probably take Stevenson in a head-to-head if they were to pick up and find each other at a random field tomorrow and just, you know, play it out for a chance to get in. I think I'd probably take Stevenson in that. So I think that said, like, you can probably put a little bit of faith in that. I think Stevenson would be in good shape to be in the tournament as well. I think of all the teams in the country, Stevenson is probably the team that with confidence is the most likely to go and would have made a potential, had the potential to make a run that missed the tournament. So it's interesting, but like we said, based on the criteria, Roanoke falling at fourth in their region behind Lynchburg, Denison, and WNL, who are all tournament teams, the strength of schedule that Roanoke played as well, and then a win over Catholic, like that was a pretty strong resume compared to Stevenson, who ended up at ninth in their regional rankings. And so it's interesting because based on those, F&M actually would have had a better shot of getting in over Stevenson. But I think, you know, it's just one of those weird quirks of the regional rankings. And based on how all of it worked out, if the one team that is kind of like a question mark is a Roanoke team that has a good high quality win over a conference winner that is battle tested and has played in the ODAC, like, I don't think that we're really in that bad shape, you know?
Yep, I see your point there.
And then the other thing that I think is important to realize is, like, I think Hope was closer to getting a Pool C than people probably realize after they ended up losing their conference championship, but were number one in their region. So that was a really interesting move from the committee and one that, like, I was worried about that in terms of thinking that Hope was going to take a Pool C from a team that's probably a bit more nationally competitive.
Agreed there. Yep. And I think the committee did make the right choice there to make it a competitive bracket like we've been talking about.
And so it's interesting to see that they ended up with going with that ODAC team that, you know, like obviously a fourth team in that region is probably going to be pretty similar to a team anywhere from 6 through 10 in region 3 or 1 and 2 even for that matter. All right. So I think that kind of sums up the first in, last out. If there's any other teams that were missing, you know, it's possible. There were lots of good teams this year that, you know, put themselves in good spots, but I think those were the main teams that were kind of the closest to actually securing one of those Pool C bids. All right, so let's go ahead. We'll switch it up. You got your crystal ball out?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, let's take a look. And you got two ready for me, or you want to do three?
Oh, I got as many as you want.
All right, grab that crystal ball out, and I need the game you're most excited for. I need your upset pick, and I need your who watch out for.
Oh, okay. All right, so first round game that I'm most excited for, I got to go with Amherst MIT. You know, I it's not just because I am a Amherst fan. I sure am. But I think MIT, they've got the undefeated season, and they're coming in pretty hot. And Amherst is a good team that we've seen play a lot of these top teams very competitively. So this is going to kind of show us if MIT's the real deal, or if they've kind of fold under the pressure of a competitive team there. So really looking forward to seeing that one. And also think Washington and Lee Cabrini could be one of those too. So looking forward to both of those.
I was going to talk about that one because I have a very specific take about this one. It's like, did you ever see Catholics versus Convicts? You remember the like Notre Dame versus? I kind of feel like this is like the bros versus nerds. It's very two opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of the kids that make up these rosters between like Philly Tough Cabrini and then WNL down in Lexington, where you have lots of, you know, smart kids from more affluent backgrounds.
Yep. That's going to be a fun mix up there. And like we were talking about, some good matchups that the committee gave us here.
Yeah, that will be a good one. All right, and then your one guy, I need your upset pick. Don't you go shying away from me on that one.
A first round upset? Oh, man.
If you had to take one.
If I have to take one?
I'm making you take one.
Put me on the spot here.
Yep.
I don't know if you'd really call this one an upset. So if you want me to pick a second one, I got another one locked and loaded.
Here's the definition of an upset when it comes to the first round. If you're looking at the bracket and the teams underneath of the other team, it's an upset.
Okay, well then this fits the criteria here. Give me Grove City over Denison all day, every day. I think Grove City's coming out hot. They had a great conference championship win, taking the pack, and Denison isn't really been battle tested since they've played in the Mustang Classic a few months back now here. So I think this is going to be one where Grove City can kind of come in and upset Denison.
So you're partially right. And what if I told you that Grove City already beat Denison 14-10 this year?
Well, then I'm sold.
And that was a home game for Grove City. So now Denison's got to be looking at that like ready for some revenge there. But yeah, they head in as the higher seed into the NCAA tournament, despite that Grove City beat them in the head-to-head.
Yeah, interesting to see that. But I think that's going to be one that's going to be an upset there. But if you want to put me on the spot for a second,
yes, but if you take mine, it still gets to be mine.
Nope, go for it. All you.
No, go, because now I'm curious.
Okay, well, if I had to pick a second one, I mean, this is putting my back against the wall here. I think maybe Catholic pulls it out against St. John Fisher. I mean, we were talking about. Good. I mean, if we were just talking about them, St. John Fisher not really battle tested as of late. Had some sort of cupcake game, so I think Catholic could be a team that can kind of come in and sneak up on them there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you that Grove City and Denison is going to be a good one. I think if I'm Denison, I'm looking at that game and I'm like, okay, well, if we don't spot them 7 goals, like literally the start of that game is Grove City 7, Denison 0. It's a quick fix to your team to say like, okay, guys, like we have to play for 60 minutes instead of 45 and we'll be all right. And so that one's interesting to me. But the one that I'm intrigued by, and this isn't one that like I think their talent is going to have them ready for it, but Roanoke and Gettysburg are on two very opposite ends of the emotional ladder. So Gettysburg, after losing that centennial, you know, like obviously you get rejuvenated a bit with life into the NCAA tournament despite losing that, but like that was a heartbreaker. And they've just kind of sat on the outside of landing a few big wins this year. So, like, emotionally, they're in a different spot. Where Roanoke, like, they just get this life out of nowhere that, like, and now there are all this noise that, like, they don't belong and you weren't good enough and you shouldn't have been in the tournament. That, like, maybe that narrative gets in their head and they show up for that game up in Carlisle against Gettysburg, like, ready to roll.
Mm-hmm. No, I can see that. I think you make a good point there.
And so that was definitely one I'd have my eye on. Those two are probably the ones that I'm most intrigued by. And then before we move on to predicting some matchups and really getting into, using that crystal ball, let's talk quickly some play-in games. And so these will take place Wednesday. So by the time you're listening to this on Thursday, you already know what's going to happen in these games. You know who's moving on to see those higher seeds in the pods. But let's give a little bit of love to these teams, you know, especially if we're not going to have another chance to talk about them before their seasons are over.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You have a big dog play-in game of the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it's tough, but give me Stevens versus SUNY Maritime. I think this is going to be a pretty good matchup that is going to kind of go back and forth. But I got Stevens in this one personally.
You're such a sweet boy. You left me my game. You knew which one I was going to take, and you left it for me anyways, didn't you?
I knew exactly which one you're eyeing up.
All right, so let's go ahead. We'll talk about them. Stockton is a team that actually, in this exact scenario, when I was coaching, we hosted Stockton when I was coaching at York for this basically same scenario. I believe they played Farmingdale State off the top of my head. Could be wrong. We'll go with it. That's who they played. And so we basically went into that kind of assuming that they were going to advance and really like dove in on preparing for them. And it's still the same guys. It felt like that was forever ago, but these guys, a bunch of them are still around, including just a massive, massive point scorer in Luke Sweetland, and then a really, really slick attackman in Dante Poley. And so those two guys can really, really make them go. If you don't have two guys that are ready to match up, or you don't have a game plan ready for them, they're going to torch you. And so that'll be really interesting. And then UMass Boston has a guy that is, you know, for the last couple of years has been at the top of the NCAA in terms of points per game each year in Gavin Admirand. So I think going into this one, you can basically bank on a bunch of scoring. You can bank on it being fun, like kind of a high-paced, higher-scoring game than maybe some of the other play-in games are going to yield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be a fun one to watch.
All right, so I think that'll probably do it for play-in games. We could probably start to transition. You have anything else you want to say about play-in games here set for tomorrow?
Nope, feeling pretty good about them, and happy these teams have an opportunity to continue their season.
Yeah, and for the record, when we were talking about people that are upset about the Pool A's, like, it makes for a really fun tournament, and it makes for a year that, like, teams in Illinois have something to work for our season, you know? Like, winning their conference and being competitive and trying to, like, work for that is a reward that's worth something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I actually got a DM from a parent in California that's a parent of a Benedictine fan, parent of a Benedictine player who is from California. He's, you know, wanted to play in the NCAA tournament, and now he gets the chance. Like, that's cool, you know? That's kind of what D3 is all about, you know?
Exactly.
So with that said, let's talk a little bit about which teams have the best paths, I should say, and who, if you're looking at, like, who you think kind of got screwed out of their path.
Yeah, yeah. If I'm talking about a tough path here, I mean, got to start with having Tufts and Salisbury in the same spot here to get into the semis. That's going to be tough for either one of those teams to pop out. And, if you're asking.
Tufts is going to have to deal with St. John Fisher, who is, you know.
Yeah, that's no easy task. So, I mean, they maybe got one game where they can get their feet under them, but they have to come back and play the very next day against most likely a great St. John Fisher team and win that game just to go on and play Salisbury just to get into the semifinals there. So talk about a tough bracket. That's going to be tough.
And from, like, a scouting perspective, if I'm Tufts, like, I can't just bank on seeing one team or another. Like, I kind of have to have a little bit of an idea, a little bit of a background on either team going into it, because Catholic or St. John Fisher, like, maybe it's not 50-50, but there's still a chance that Catholic comes out of that. And if you put all your eggs into the St. John Fisher basket, like, you might be scrambling a little bit last minute. And kind of the opposite side of that, like, Union, like, they're probably putting in most of the time into their, like, background scout. Like, you obviously have to focus on you know, who you're going to see in the play-in, but they're probably focused a bit more on Lynchburg. You know, if I'm them there, I'm probably putting most of my eggs in that basket, just not expecting Western New England to have quite the same chance to beat Lynchburg as Catholic has to beat St. John Fisher. And so that, like, nuance of it kind of is even one more wrinkle that makes Tufts' path even just that much more difficult. Salisbury, I don't really feel bad for. Like, I guess if they see Greeny again, like, there's a chance based on the fact that that game was pretty close the first time that that it's close again. But, like, I don't know. My hunch is that that wouldn't happen that way again and that Salisbury would be better prepared and, you know, kind of like we saw the second time they played CNU, like, different results, right? And then just so happens to be that they still won the first one against Greeny, you know, barely, but they did. And so I think it, for whatever reason, like, my hunch says that if they saw them again, it would be wouldn't be the same type of game. So them, like, I don't feel so bad for about their path.
I like it.
Another team I think had kind of interesting spot is so Bowdoin gets the benefit of getting bumped away from Tufts. Like, they've already lost to him twice. It's the total opposite of Gettysburg, who's already lost to Dickinson twice and then gets sent to go host there again. Like, not only do they have to go and play them, but they have to relive on the same field the overtime loss, you know, so, like, they're in their own different world. Bowdoin kind of gets the opposite treatment, gets sent up and gets sent away from Tufts. So they got to be loving that. St. Lawrence right there in the Bowdoin pod, though, has the total opposite thing going with they're going to have to see RIT to get out of that section again. So, like, you kind of have teams all over the place. What's really interesting is you have teams from the same conference on different sides of the bracket. So, like, in theory, we could have two Liberty League teams playing for the national championship. It would be make for some really interesting narratives.
Definitely.
All right, so I think that's probably, like, I don't know how much more bracket content I have in me. It's pretty deep dive. Talked about the ins and outs, talked about some matchups, talked about some early round matchups. So not really much left to say other than let's just see how it all plays out. You know, I'm really excited for it. Make sure you go and get your fan picks in on the calendar that's already up. These games are set, so you can go and get those set already. And then I guess before we go, though, we do owe a big congratulations, don't we, Big Dog? A Big Dog-sized congratulations.
Oh, we sure do. I'm super pumped for this.
So Max Wayne selected in the PLL draft as the 21st pick to the Atlas. So really excited for him. If you're not familiar with Max, do yourself a favor. Go give a quick Google. Try and find some of the CNU highlights on Instagram or something like that. He's the big monster that's ripping everybody's sticks out of their hands. So he won't be too
best
too
way hard. To describe him.
He won't be too hard to find. And so he's had a great year. He you know, leads the defense both statistically and, you know, as a figure. And then in addition to just guarding the number one guy on the other team, he's racked up 46 caused turnovers and 48 ground balls on the year. So really impressive stats and guarding the number one guy on the other team. Just, you know, not too much more, not enough can be said about his impact so far for CNU. And he's a lifer, you know, like he's been playing for, he's logged a ton of minutes in his career, you know, starting all the way back since, like, really since 2018 at this point, because he's in a fifth year graduate season. So just a great career and now capped off with being drafted into the PLL. So congratulations to him.
Yep, very impressive.
And next up, we wait for Ryan Kennedy to get his invitation in the mail to a minicamp.
Fingers crossed. I know my my meme campaign to the Water Dogs wasn't wasted.
Yeah, you got to just keep it rolling. It's going to hit at some point. Then when it does, you can be like, you can take a whole bunch of credit for it. I'll let you.
Yeah, I'll take a bunch of credit and like 20% of his paycheck. That should be
And like Ryan 100%, like more like 100% non-York bias aside, deserves an opportunity to at least get an invite to a camp and show what he can do. You know, like,
oh yeah,
93 ground balls on the season, 54 calls turnovers. He guards the other team's best player, whether it's a midfielder or an attackman. Like, there's not enough you can say, but he's got just an incredible stick, knack for ground balls and picking passes off. Like, he's had an incredible season. So hopefully someone out there gives him a chance and lets him get, you know, gives him a shot to come out to a camp and show what he can do.
Much, it would be much deserved. Yep. Good season from him, and a great way to cap it off.
All right. And so with that said, I think we are wrapped up here on our NCAA tournament edition of the D3 podcast. Caleb, you have anything else you want to let the people know before we head on out?
That's about it, Dan. I think we hit on all the big topics, and I'm looking forward to watching some of these great games coming up here.
All right, and as always, you can find us on Twitter. That's where we do the bulk of our banter, so feel free to join on in. You can find the big dog at
CAbney02.
And you can always find me at TheKaplan46. We are your D3 pod hosts. We love you. We appreciate you guys for listening. And we are excited to come to you for next week. Oh, drop that.